All right, the dulcet tones of Chris Cross remind us that on a Tuesday at this hour, we check in with our friend Karen Lyle with SalesportTalk.com. Karen, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and we are both very excited to welcome our guest to the show. He'll be here for two segments, a Knight of the Realm, Sir Keith Mills, and he is a most excellent Order of the British Empire member and a deputy lieutenant to the Crown, an avid sailor, a person who was on the board of Tottenham Hotspur, my favorite team, and also was part of the London bid for 2012, where he was the deputy chairman. Sir Keith, welcome to the show. First of all, what was it like to get suited and booted and go to Buckingham Palace for all the pomp and circumstance for receiving a knighthood like that?
Well, hi, guys. I know it's a very, very special day. And actually, I'm one of the few people to have done it twice, because I was given a knighthood by the Queen at Buckingham Palace when I led our bid for the London 2012 Games. And then I spent the next 7 years chairing the organizing committee, and we delivered a great game. So I was invited back this time to Windsor Castle when I got what's called a Grand Knight Cross, which is a sort of very high order. And it is very special. I mean, it goes back hundreds of years, and it's a concept that, you know, rewards those people that have made a big contribution to the country.
Well, Sir Keith, I was really fascinated to see that you are not only involved in sailing and backing the sport with the Ben Ainslie's team back in the past for the America's Cup, and also but also in soccer. And it seems that to me that sailing and soccer fans are, and those involved in it, that just goes hand in hand. So you love both of those sports.
Actually, I like pretty much all sports. I've been involved in sailing and soccer and actually several other sports too. But I am a bit of a sports nut. I love competition. I'm very competitive, and you know, it's a real joy being part of these major sports events. Sometimes they're heartbreaking, but they give lots of people lots of joy.
Now, I'm a lifelong Tottenham fan, a member since 91 when they made international membership a thing. And that was the first year I got to the old lane. I did get to the new stadium last October as well, so I'm a Spurs man through and through. When you were on the board, was that going back to Irving Scholar, or was it with Alan Sugar, or with Daniel Levy?
No, I came on board when Daniel Levy and Joe Lewis bought the club, and since then, you know, the club has grown beyond you know, anyone's dreams. I was involved in the early days of deciding whether we build a new stadium, and we're talking seven or eight years ago now, and it cost rather more than we anticipated, but I have to say it is one of the best stadiums in the world, and in fact we now host NFL games there, so it's one of the, well, I think it's the only club to have a stadium that has a retractable field, so you have an American football field, and two or three hours later it's converted into a soccer field. It's pretty impressive.
Well, that's pretty amazing. You know, I was introduced to you by Sir Robin Knox-Johnson, and of course he was the founder of the Round the World Clipper race, which you competed in, not in 1999, and actually won that race with Alex Thompson as your captain. And you two have had a friendship that's gone on for more than 20 years since that time. Tell us about your love of sailing and how that intertwined with Alex Thompson's career.
Yeah, you're right. Back in 98-99, I was one of the amateur crew. There were 10 crew and a professional skipper. And Alex was the youngest professional skipper to have done this race. I think he was 23 or 24 years old at the time. And that was an extraordinary experience. I'm not sure whether many people have been involved in ocean racing, but it's It's not for the faint-hearted. As you say, we won the race against seven other boats, and when we came back, Alex and I had formed a really close friendship. I helped him set up a yacht racing business, and that yacht racing business and his extraordinary ocean racing adventures have been very much part of my life for the last 20 years.
And the thing that I really admire about you, too, is that you're a self-made man. I think a lot of times we see someone with a royal title and we think that they were to the manor born and attended Eton or Oxford. You really had a lot of hard graft to get where you are, aren't you?
Yeah, I certainly didn't go to Eton or Oxford. No, I sort of was asked to leave school at 15, and the only qualification I had then was a swimming certificate. So I came up the hard way, started my own businesses, I've been very fortunate to have done and experienced some extraordinary things. But you're right. It's with all these things, it takes a lot of hard work to make these things happen. But you know, I've been unbelievably fortunate and really very grateful that I've had the opportunity to do so many amazing things.
You know, Sir Keith, I was hearing that Alex, set off to sail on the Bendy Globe, had some rudder problem with his boat and had to leave the race. Could you tell us how he's doing and what's happening with that?
Yeah, this is a tragic story. Alex Thompson and the team have been trying to win the Vendée Globe for the last 20 years. So this is Alex's fifth attempt to win the Vendée Globe. And on the first, so the Vendée Globe, for those that don't know, has to be the most testing athletic challenge of any sport. If you can imagine sailing a 60-foot boat single-handed on your own for up to 3 months at a time, only ever sleeping for 20 minutes at a time, in the harshest conditions on the planet in the Southern Oceans, it is the most grueling test for any athlete. And the first two occasions in 2004 and 2008, Alex didn't finish, and on both occasions almost lost his life. Then in 2012, he got third place, and 2016 he got second place, and this time he had without question the fastest boat. It was the best prepared. He was the most experienced. And frankly, for the first week or 10 days, he led the race until he had some structural problems, which, to his great credit and the team, he spent two or three days down below repairing with carbon reinforcements on the girders in the bow of the boat. Got those fixed, got back up to speed, started to gain a lot of distance on the leaders. And then on Saturday night, had a massive bang at the back of the boat, went out to investigate, and it appears that he'd picked up a large fishing net that had been discarded by a fishing boat that had wrapped itself round one of the rudders and ripped off the rudder and the rudder stock, which really meant that the boat was unrepairable and unsailable. And very sadly had to take the decision to abandon the race. And as we speak, he's slowly making his way into Cape Town, should arrive at the weekend, but he's out of the race. So really tragic after 20 years of trying to win this race that, as the favorite, he won't be there at the finish.
I remember about 15 years ago, Bruce Schwab, who was the first American to complete the Vendée Globe, on this show, he would call in once a week on a satellite phone just to check in. And there were good days and there were bad days. And he got a little bit melancholy there. It is an absolute grueling, not just physical, but mental test as well, isn't it?
Oh, it's brutal, completely brutal. You are on your own. You're not allowed any assistance. Sleep deprivation is huge. This is not just a few days. This is weeks and months alone in the most hostile conditions. And actually, if anyone's interested, if you go onto the Alex Thompson Racing website, you'll hear him yesterday talking on camera, on video, about what he was feeling. And he's a broken guy. He's just completely shattered his dream. It's tough, very tough.
Tittle and Karen Lyle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back with Sir Keith Mills. And we'll also be able to take your calls if you'd like to ask Sir Keith a question. The toll-free number coast to coast and around the world, 1-800-878-PLAY. That's 1-800-878-7529. I'm back with more on the other side. Rick Tittle with you, Sports Byline USA.
Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I'm on Vivica in the San Francisco Bay. We just took her out for a beautiful sail, and I'm here with Milos. And Milos, tell us a little bit about where you came from and what you're doing.
Hey, good day. I just came from the East Coast, from Cape Cod, and I came to San Francisco to help a friend, Jerry, who runs the amazingly beautiful boat Vivica, which is in the final stage of her restoration and bringing to new life. And we just finished. Amazing sail. It's my first time in San Francisco, and I love every bit of it.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I am here on Vivica with...
My name's Mark Nile.
How was it today?
It was really great. It was slow at the beginning, but we got some puss by the end of it, and of course it's great. Sailing on a 1929 schooner, how could it ever not be great?
Where are you from, and where did you come before you came here to Vivica?
I'm from South Sydney, Australia, where I did my boat building apprenticeship, and then I went to Canada for the best part of 3 years before coming down here to California to work for Jeff.
How is it to see this project finished?
Oh, exhilarating, fantastic, a whole bunch of words like that, I guess.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I'm here on Vivica with the captain, Jerry Adkins. And Jerry, how was it being out and seeing this beautiful boat finished and going out and sailing today?
Incredibly satisfying. It's been a long haul this year. We came here in January, so almost a year ago. It's been a tough year, but it's very satisfying to have the job done, and the boat is sailing great, and she's a lovely boat to sail, and we're really happy. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me aboard. It was great sailing with you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Really appreciate it.
I'm here on Vivica with Magdalena. And Magdalena, this is your first time out sailing, but you went up to the top of the mast. How was that?
Yes, it was a little scary, but pretty amazing. No other view like the top of the mast. And plus, you're sitting in a chair, so it still feels pretty safe.
And now you're sailing at the helm.
Yeah, first time on one of my dad's boats. And it's quite the experience. It's a great time.
This is Karen Lyle, and I'm here with Monpuya, who was drumming for us on Vivica today. How'd you like the sail?
Sailing was good. Being with you guys, it was lovely. And it's a beautiful day. On top of that, drumming, yeah, they mixed my day today by drumming and you dancing. It was a wonderful.
It was fantastic, Dave.
Fantastic. I love it.
All right, thank you for that, and we are back on Sports Byline USA and American Forces Radio Network, SailsportTalk.com for another segment. Rick Tittle and Karen Lyle, along with Sir Keith Mills. We will bring in Jeff Rutherford of Rutherford Boats here in a couple minutes. But we just heard Karen do a little report there on the windy waters there on Vivica, your boat, Sir Keith. And tell us a little bit more and how you came up with the name.
Well, the boat was already named Vivica, and I've been trying to get to the bottom of what Vivica actually means. Somebody told me that it means difficult woman in Finnish, but I'm not sure that's actually true. So I came across Vivica. A very close friend of mine, a guy called Rob Gray, found the boat in a marina in San Francisco about 7 years ago. He'd been at a dinner party. Somebody was talking about this amazing schooner that was looking a bit sad in a marina, and Rob found the boat. It was a wonderful guy in his 90s called Merle Peterson that was living on the boat, had been living on the boat in the marina for many years. Merle had bought the boat in 1950, sailed 1.5 times around the world on it. But the boat was now looking very sad, and my buddy went and talked to Merle and said, look, you know, if you ever want to sell this boat, I'd love to restore it. And a few months later, Merle sold the boat to Rob. My friend Rob then gave the boat to Jeff Rutherford, who you're going to hear from shortly. And Jeff started the restoration, which was really a complete rebuild because the boat was really rotten right the way through the hull. And then I took over the project a couple of years ago from my friend Rob to finish it off. And Jeff and his team at Rutherford's have produced a spectacular restoration. I'm only sad that because of COVID, I'm not able to be in San Francisco to see the sea trials. But I'm looking forward to getting on board and sailing her soon.
Well, Sir Keith, I thank you so much for the opportunity to sail aboard her on the sea trial. And I had an opportunity to meet Jeffrey, who's with us here today, because he was at the helm and enjoying showing off this absolutely gorgeous boat. And Jeffrey, this was quite a restoration for you. It took many years. Where did you start when you began this restoration in the process?
Well, you know, in the beginning, you think, well, we'll be able to save this part or that part. And so you head off down that road. And during that process, you go, oh, well, we really need to replace this and that. And you end up on this project. We ended up replacing, you know, 95% of the boat and piece by piece. And so at this point, her structure is mostly brand new, and as is her complete interior and rig. It's hard to know. If you can make the call on day one that, okay, we're going to know exactly what you're going to replace, yes, it would be a lot easier. You'd probably save a fair bit of money because we did do some work in the first year that was basically for nothing because we ended up stepping backwards and replacing some of that stuff.
So how does Latitude, Jeff, I'll ask you this, how does Latitude 38, latitude38.com get involved with this restoration?
Well, they've done several stories over the years. They did a couple of stories on their print publication, and they did one or two on their online publication. But other than that, they're not involved.
Well, and basically, I know I had talked to John Arndt, who's a good friend of mine, and we certainly appreciate Latitude 38's contribution to Northern California boating with their magazine they've been doing for so many, many years. But they're fans of Vivica, and just have followed that and showed pictures of sightings of Vivica throughout the years. And when we were out on the bay, there were a lot of boats who came up and alongside. She was so admired for her beauty. Jeff, how did it feel to be at the conclusion of this project and actually have her sailing?
Well, this is always the best part of a project, particularly one as big and glamorous as Vivica is, you know, this business, it's a lot of hard work. It's sticky and dirty and smells bad and it's bad for you, and you're wearing protective gear all the time and whatnot. But the satisfaction that one gets on completion of a project like that is really the reason we do it with so much love, because it's just, it's so fantastic, and we can all feel very proud of what we do. But we do have, you know, it's the craftsmen get credit for sure, but the designer, of course, gets a lot of the credit because he designed, you know, a gorgeous boat that sails well as also. And then there are the owners. I always look upon the owners as sort of patrons of the arts, people who support craftsmen like us and allow us to do the best work that we know how to do. It really takes all these elements, you know, the designer, the craftsman, and the owner, and they all have to be on board for it. So we feel very lucky that that we get to do this type of thing.
And Sir Keith, I have a question for you. It's a bit of a non sequitur, but I know that you live in Royal Tunbridge Wells, and I remember taking the train down to Hastings. I was going to see Battle, and the train stopped in Tunbridge, and then 4 miles later it was in Tunbridge Wells, or vice versa. But Tunbridge was with an O, and Tunbridge Wells is with a U. Do you know why the discrepancy in the spelling there?
I'm sure there is a reason, but I think that was decided a few years before I was born. it goes back several hundred years, I think. I'm very, very sad. I can't answer that question.
Okay.
Well, and Rick, I have to say, because I have some family heritage back to about 1100 in England, well, Viking times and so forth, and the spellings were all over the place. I mean, the same name, same people, different spellings, so who knows, you know, if it goes back far enough. Sir Keith, what is your plan for Vivica? Because you're going to be taking her from the Bay Area, and we're going to miss her, but we want to know what she's going to be doing.
Well, actually, the plans have changed because of the pandemic. The original plan was to ship her round to the East Coast and do some racing and regattas around Newport. That was the original plan. And then take her down to the Caribbean and do some racing down in the Caribbean. And then eventually across to the Med, where there are a lot of classic regattas in the Mediterranean. But all our plans have had to change, sadly, and so the plan right now is she'll leave maybe this weekend, sail down to San Diego, wait in San Diego for a week or two, and then be shipped from Ensenada round to Florida, off the boat in Florida for a couple of weeks, waiting a cargo ship to the Med, and she'll end up hopefully at the end of February in Palma in Mallorca in the Mediterranean, and the plan then is for us to start racing her in the racing season for the summer next year. That's the plan, and you know, I'd like to think that one day we'll bring her back to the States and do some regattas in the States. I lived in Boston for a number of years, so Newport and Cape Cod is an area I know quite well. I'd really like to race her back there. I bought her to race her. One of the reasons I was so attracted to the boat was she was designed by Frank Payne in the 1920s. And you remember that Frank Payne was an America's Cup designer. And if you look at the hull shape of Vivica, which is a schooner, it's really, really quite racy. You know, most schooners are very broad, they were designed to carry lots of stuff. This schooner is very different, and I think she might be a wolf in sheep's clothing, because you get a fairly favorable rating as a schooner, and I hope when we get on the race course we'll surprise a few people.
Jeff, what was the biggest challenge in restoring Vivica? Because I'm sure it's not an easy task. And how much stuff is just completely rebuilt from scratch?
Well, the vast majority has been rebuilt. The woodworking portion is not that difficult. The work is difficult, but the most difficult thing, I would say, is locating appropriate hardware. You try to have it be vintage or at least a vintage look, and as the years go by, everything is stainless steel and composite construction, and which is great stuff, but it doesn't match the vintage. And so really, that's what I find to be one of the biggest problems we have. We have to make lots of custom hardware, which takes a long time. And particularly at the end of the project, because hardware generally happens at the end. And so you've got deadlines, and you're just trying to locate this stuff. And in today's world, I would say trying to restore a classic yacht, that the most difficult thing is finding the appropriate hardware so that it looks correct.
I can certainly empathize with that. I have, as you know, a piano rebuilding company, Piano Finders, and we rebuild these pianos that are between the 1800s to 1930s, 40s, and that hardware is an issue. And do you nickel plate the hardware like we do on the pianos and then varnish it, or how is it done?
Well, no, that's at times up to the owner's wish. It can be nickel plated if it's interior. Exterior, it can be chrome plated if that's the look you want, but most often it is just plain brass or bronze, depending upon what job it's doing. So that's the most common. It's just plain and gives the crew something to do. You wouldn't want them to get bored, you know, so they've got lots of bronze to polish.
All right. Well, we're up against it. I want to make sure we thank. We just heard from Jeff Rutherford. You can check out more about what they do over there at rutherfordboats.com. And our thanks to a Knight of the Realm, the self-made blue blood, Sir Keith Mills, the owner of Vivica. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right.
Thank
and Karen,
you for
Karen, we'll check in with you next week.
Sounds great. We'll be talking America's Cup.